Welcome to episode 13 of The Tangles, official companion podcast of BeneathTheTangles.com. I'm your host, JP, known affectionately or not online as Japes and Japesland.
And I'm your co-host, Chong.
And I'm this episode's co-co-host, Charles, or TWWK.
This month marks a very special occasion for The Tangles podcast. That not only is this our 13th episode, but this month we're actually celebrating the one-year anniversary of the podcast. So as a celebration of 1 year of The Tangles, we've taken all the experience of our last 12 episodes and developed an entirely new format for the show. So as we kick off this new format, Charles is going to share some new and exciting things going on with Beneath The Tangles.
All right, thanks, JP. I've got two updates this month. First, we finally developed our manga recommendations page, something we've been meaning to do for a long time. Our writers have given recommendations for Christian readers. Please check it out if you're looking to jump into manga and aren't sure where to begin. I think it'll be a good start for you. And secondly, we have a call out for new staff. While we're stacked with writers at the moment, we have other roles we want to fill. Primarily, we're looking for individuals to work with social media, web development, and maybe even our own staff artists. So that's what's new here at Beneath the Tangles this month. And now we'll move on to Otaku Diet.
Otaku Diet.
Thanks, Charles. While video game podcasts have a What We're Playing section, and anime podcasts have a What We're Watching section, since Beneath the Tangles covers more than just one medium, and The Tangles reflects that diversity, we decided to name this section Otaku Diet in order to include all types of otaku media, like anime, light novels, video games, manga, visual novels, and anything else applicable. Now, as part of our new format, Otaku Diet is also going to take a shift. Starting this month, instead of listing everything in our diet and talking briefly about each entry, we're going to be taking the quality over quantity approach. So each of us will pick the most significant entry in our diet over the past month and talk about it for just a few minutes at length in order to expose each other and our listeners to some different media just a little bit better. So I can go ahead and start if you guys are okay with that.
Go for it, JP.
Do I have your consent, Charles?
I guess.
We're hanging on every word, Charles.
Those are not very convincing.
JP's countenance is false.
Now go for it.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
Thank you. All right. So now, have you guys seen Angel Beats? That's my my transition here.
I have only seen 3 episodes of Angel Beats.
Charles, you've seen it, right?
I watched it once enthusiastically and a second time not as enthusiastic.
Okay. You more or less feel how I did. Now, my entry is not Angel Beats, the anime. I watched it once enthusiastically, and yeah, second time I got through and was like, all right, this was not quite as good as I thought it was the first time around. Well, I had the opportunity to start reading Angel Beats First Beat, which is actually the visual novel adaptation of Angel Beats. And so I'm going to keep this brief, but this is very unusual for something to go anime to visual novel. It is much more often the opposite, much like it's very rare to read a good novelization of a film. Usually it's the opposite way around, right? So it's very strange for this to happen, and I was a little skeptical when I started reading. By the way, it is in Japanese, so if you don't know Japanese, then you'll just have
to
wait.
So if you're not JP.
If you're not me, I'm sorry. or Kaze. I'm sorry, you'll just have to wait a few years while they get around to translating it. I want to say, though, the things that frustrated me the most about the show are fixed, and it is incredible.
More delicious melodrama?
It is. Well, no, there's plenty of delicious melodrama. It's just, it's more delicious now.
Delicious and nutritious.
My example, I haven't even finished one route yet, so I could be totally off base, and maybe it'll be horrible. But basically, the way the show works is each person gets their own arc, and then they're gone for the rest of the show. I don't want to spoil too much. But in the visual novel, they fixed the problem where everything felt so rushed, and now each character, instead of being removed from the story, you actually continue the rest of the timeline with this character that used to not be there. So, unfortunately, still only in Japanese, I apologize, but I highly recommend it for anyone who's been frustrated by Angel Beats, or even loves Angel Beats, because I'm sure you'll love the visual novel even more. So, how about you, Charles? What have you been consuming?
I'm actually getting into a couple of light novels.
Oh really?
I don't like the medium.
Oh really?
I was really so it's
both eyebrows are now raised on JP's forehead.
So you know, I was a huge fan of Haruhi Suzumiya back in the day. And so I thought, I'll get into the light novels and see everything that's happening. And I just couldn't even get past through the first one because I thought, man, wow, this is just really bad writing. I may be the minority here. But anyway, I decided to get into light novels again just because I guess it was last season that my teen romantic comedy snafu was finishing off. Mm-hmm. And I was really into it, so I started reading the light novels.
We all know how much you were into that, Charles.
Love it. So I started reading the light novel for that, and I'm really enjoying it. It sticks pretty close to the anime, but there's a lot more focus on the supporting characters. And the main character, Hikigaya, is very different, which at first kind of turned me off, but actually I find him more accessible in the light novels. He's kind of more adolescent, not quite as smart, I think, as we see in the anime. So maybe that's why I relate to him a little bit better. There's so much dialogue, or not dialogue, but there's so much thinking going on in anime, like things are going on in his mind, that it really leads to a lot of lengthy discussion in the novel, which actually reads pretty well. So it's really good. It just got licensed, which I'm excited about. So there's that. I had a friend at church recommend me another light novel for Roka no Yusha. Do you know this series, JP or Sean?
I don't.
You've got me on that one.
I think the anime is actually airing this season.
Okay. I don't really know much about it, but I definitely know what you're talking about now. Yes.
Yeah. So it's basically the story is that you have like this ancient evil, and then you have these warriors that are mystically selected. And there's six of them that time and time again, six warriors get together and they defeat the evil. And I guess...
Are they called servants?
I was going to say, good thing there's not seven of them. Or I might have to start a copyright infringement lawsuit.
Well, Sean, there are seven.
But
that's kind of the thing here is that there's only supposed to be six. So one of them is going to betray them and they don't know who it's going to be. And apparently the franchise is really... pretty intense, and the anime is intense, I guess. I've only just started the light novels, but I'm enjoying that one as well. And that's about it for me.
The traitor better not be called Gilgamesh.
Charles seems unconvinced.
Well, to follow up the vanguard of recommendations and consumption, we've already had light novels and visual novels and anime, so I'm going to go ahead and bookend it with a video game I've been playing. Unfortunately, there haven't been too many shows that I've picked up this season. There's been one or two, but I would say the biggest time sink for me in the past couple months, really, has been Bloodborne. I finally got into it. I was able to get a PS4 a little later on this year, and one of the first games I picked up was Bloodborne. I was so busy with life-related things that I didn't have time to immerse myself in fantasy, but I finally got moved into a new apartment, so I've had some time to dig into it, and... for those of you who haven't already played it, the game is phenomenal. It's kind of a spiritual successor to the Demon Souls, Dark Souls, From Software lineage of this game is super hard and you're going to die and break controllers variety. but the thing I'd like to point out about this game to anyone who may have played some of the other Souls games and is maybe turned off by the difficulty is that I find this to be much more fairly balanced. It just seems to be a natural evolution of the concept, and I wouldn't call it casual or dumbed down because the experience is really an incredible one, and the setting is this great Victorian Gothic era-esque, kind of almost like a werewolves and vampire Sherlock Holmes mixed with Lovecraftian horror.
So like...
So niche, perhaps.
Yeah. niche, perhaps. That might be the understatement of the episode.
Well, you know, the game itself is understated, so I can only do it service by an understatement. It's a very subtle game. Not a lot of the exposition is delivered through dialogue. Most of it is just in the world. You have to observe it, and if you're not paying attention, then you won't get it, and you'll just be running around and killing monsters. But if you want to dig deeper, look for subtext, or look for world building and the construction and the places you explore and the people you do encounter, It's a really incredible, I would say, spiritual experience. Very few times do I play a game or watch a movie that gives me an actual physical reaction of, you know, goosebumps or awe or enjoyment. And maybe some of that's because I've watched so much that I get kind of cynical and I'm not entertained easily. But but the other part is there's just a lot of lazy writing. And furthermore, there's a lot of shallow writing. And I think a lot of us in our entertainment really want an experience that motivates us or has some spiritual content. And so on that basis, I can really recommend Bloodborne. It deals with issues like the church and hypocrisy of true faith versus legalism. And it has, you know, if you have the right sense of humor and the right appreciation, there are several love stories and overarching developments that have ready biblical metaphor and application. But beyond all that, if you just want to kill monsters, it's got great polished gameplay and it's loads of fun. So, you know, if that's your angle and you're just trying to get to the top of the video game food chain, then I can't recommend Bloodborne highly enough. Mm-hmm. Well, after that recommendation, that concludes our otaku diet, and we are going to be moving on to our next section of the podcast, our interview, which also has a new format that JP will tell us a little bit about.
Indeed, it does have a new format. Now, we really love the chance we have to talk with new people every month, and although we wanted to streamline the podcast a lot more, we didn't want to give up that opportunity to interact with different people in the community. So in our new format, the guest portion of the podcast will take the form of a pre-recorded 15-minute one-on-one interview that will allow us to really dig into the topics that matter more efficiently and effectively. So to help us start this off for episode 13, we were happy to have journalist Lauren Orsini on the show. Let's take a listen. For episode 13 of The Tangles, and the first episode of our new interview format, we're very excited to welcome this month's guest. Our guest this time around is not only a prolific author and journalist, but simply a wonderful person, and it's an absolute joy to welcome back to The Tangles, otakujournalist.com's very own Lauren Orsini.
Oh, how flattering.
Well, now I say welcome back because you were actually on the show before, right?
That's right.
In fact, I'm actually really excited to have you for the first episode of our new format, because you were actually our very first guest for the podcast at all a year ago.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised when Charles asked me, but because at first glance, it doesn't seem like our blogs have a lot in common, but actually we've been cheerleading each other from the very beginning. We started our blogs about it at the same time.
Speaking of your appearance a year ago, and feeling appropriate that this episode's theme is more or less the year in review, you had some big stuff going on last year when we interviewed, didn't you?
That's right. I interviewed with you right before I announced that I was going to be a weekly streaming reviewer for Anime News Network.
And how's that been going?
I can't believe I've been doing that for over a year now. It's definitely the part of my job, or the thing I do for money, that feels least like a job. I mean, basically, three times a week, I watch anime and then write however I feel about it.
Well, that's the ideal career, isn't it? Now, is it? I think the saying is, it's not work if you enjoy it, or if you do something you enjoy, you never work a day in your life.
I guess so. Like, every time they say something like, we're glad to have you back for this season for starting reviews, I'm like, you're not going to be able to get rid of me. You're going to have to fire me if you want to leave.
That sounds like a great situation. So what have been some of your highlights at Anime News Network?
I think whenever I get to put a really interesting insight or even a joke into one of my reviews, because I have to review every week, whether the episode resonated with me or not, whether it was a particularly strong episode, no matter what. So sometimes I'm like, oh, what am I going to write about this week? I start writing something. I'm like, no, I said that last week. But I've been able to say some things that I've been pretty proud of. Like, I really liked reviewing Rinne. Yeah, it's an anime inspired by the work of Rumiko Takahashi, who did Ranma One Half and Inuyasha.
Oh.
Now, I loved her stuff when I was in middle school. So I really liked writing about how I feel like I've grown up and her style of anime has not. The characters, I haven't been really keeping up with Renee since I stopped reviewing it after last season, but they had yet to have their first kiss after 14 episodes.
That's pretty, that's not unusual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you're doing your reviews, do you follow one series and then just review that every single week for Anime News Network, or do you follow a handful? How does that work?
Every season I follow three. And sometimes the season will go on for a long time. Like Yamamushi Petal went for a long time, and I was reviewing it for episodes and episodes.
Mm-hmm.
About two seasons worth.
Well,
I do review a lot of sports anime, and they go on a long time.
You and Annalyn would get along well. One of our other staff members here at the Tangles is an enormous fangirl of sports anime.
I know, I read her work. I mean, you'd expect that, right?
Well, I can definitely empathize with you. My column is Anime Today, and so obviously I'm supposed to be covering anime of today. And sometimes there's just weeks when there's nothing good to write about, it feels like. But I pull something out of my rear end when those weeks come around.
Yeah, the fact that you have to, that there's a deadline, and you know, I have to write about something this week, it really helps. It really helps you think of something. And also, I found it's very strong to just think of, like, okay, well, what is one thing that I could say about this? Mm-hmm. And that can be my overarching premise for 500 words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Having to come up with something definitely gets the gears turning, I would agree.
Yeah, and you can just come up with, like, even if you're, like, really racking your brains, I'm sure you can think of one thing that struck you and mm-hmm. that has some semblance of an opinion. Like, I love reviewing Ushio and Tora, but I like it a lot, and it's hard to review an anime you like because you end up, like, gushing the same praise every mm-hmm. week. So yeah. I've been trying to think of, I think last week what I thought of was, what made this episode pretty good was that I didn't know if the bad guy was really the bad guy. And mm-hmm. I talked about, like, shades of good and evil. And, mm-hmm. like, good and evil aren't always black and white in the world. And I was able to write an entire thing just based on that one thought.
Speaking of your career in journalism, actually, and of the year in review, what's been going on in your career recently?
Well, I think the most visible thing is that I started at Forbes.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
It's silly. It's a business site, Forbes.com. After mm-hmm. I moved on from tech journalism, I connected with an editor, a former editor, and she said, "Hey, Lauren, do you want to work at Forbes?" And I said, "Sure, if I can write about nerd stuff." And she said, "Done."
That's that's a pretty incredible connection to make.
Yeah, it really worked out. We each have to have a topic on Forbes that we don't really stray from, and mine mm-hmm. is the business of fandom. Get how it's kind of a Forbes topic? Mm-hmm. Business, like how much money cosplayers make, things mm-hmm. like that.
Well, those are some, those are some legitimate businesses that don't often get very much attention in the business world.
I thought too. I'm
so used to thinking in terms of, like, the spiritual and the secular world. So pastors and seminaries versus, like, liberal arts colleges and things. But I think I tend to fall into that line of thinking when I'm like the otaku world and the non-otaku world.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool that you're able to bring some of your expertise, your very niche expertise, into a setting like Forbes.com, though. That's really, really neat.
I think that's really my element, is bringing our very specific interests to a much wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, from what I've read of yours on Forbes, it seems like you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you. What have you read?
Well, it's been a couple weeks now. I've read through a couple of your articles. I remember reading a little bit on cosplay, as you mentioned. But the thing that really stood out is I noticed there was a little bit of a bite-sized controversy regarding how you referred to anime in your articles. So I notice in many of your Forbes articles, you actually refer to anime or Japanese animation in a way that seems to have offended some of the medium's, let's say, bigger fans by calling them Japanese cartoons. Could you shed a little light on this topic?
Yeah, that's right. Well, as I said, Forbes is for a general audience. A lot of the people who are reading my articles do this without even having heard the word anime before.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't write my own headlines. So my editor's job is to try to figure out what is going to make your articles have the widest approach,
mm-hmm.
interest the largest number of people. And not everyone knows what anime is, but everyone knows what cartoons are.
Yeah, sure.
So we call them Japanese cartoons, always in the title.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll say anime, a type of Japanese cartoon, on the inside of the story. The mm-hmm. whole point is by attracting a wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
If I were just writing to anime fans, I mean, a lot of them already know about the stuff I'm writing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a totally different audience. I know I've seen your articles, particularly because of you sharing them on Twitter or from Charles connecting me to them, something like that. So obviously I'm a little bit more on the inside, so I'm not in that target audience. And yeah, I would say most of those people you're talking about who might be offended by referring to them as Japanese cartoons are not within that target audience. I mean,
well, in a way, I would consider them in my target audience because, yes, this is to attract as wide an audience as possible, but I also want anime fans to be able to look at my work and say, oh, this is a woman who knows her stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's not writing about anime as this weird, bizarre thing that some people seem to like for some reason, and it's probably all porn, but someone who knows about anime and is a fan and is presenting it to outsiders in a way that does it justice.
That's a very fair point. Yeah, and maybe even your articles on Forbes are drawing people into an area of information and news that they've never seen or really been a part of before. Because I wonder how many anime fans are regularly reading Forbes, but now maybe have checked it a handful of times because they've seen your articles.
Yeah, I that would be amazing if my articles convinced at least one person to try out anime, and maybe they're like a big business investor guy, mm-hmm. and they decide to invest in Funimation and we get more shows or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can go both ways, I suppose. And now, to wrap up, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of your original creations. And now, obviously, your journalism is an original creation, but what I'm referring to is more of last year you released your book, Otaku Journalism. And if our listeners would like to learn more about that, I'd encourage them to check out episode 1 of the podcast, UnbeneathTheTangles.com, or check out your blog, otakujournalist.com. But it's been a year since then, and so a lot can happen in a year. So have you released any new publications or projects, or do you have anything in the pipeline that you could tell our listeners about?
Yeah. Actually, first I want to talk about something small that I've released, which is a free email course. You sign up for it. It's the first banner on my site. And it's about writing niche reviews, including anime reviews. And you just get signed up and you get sent a new lesson every day for a week. I just thought I should mention this because we were talking about how we write reviews of anime.
Mm-hmm.
And that very specifically talks about the process I go through for writing reviews of things like anime and video games and comics.
That sounds like a really valuable resource. I saw it briefly on your site, and I was very intrigued. But yeah, it's I'd love to read a little bit more about it, maybe get involved myself too.
Yeah, well, it's 100% free.
That's awesome.
And the other big thing, the big thing that I worked on was this May, I released my second self-published book, Build Your Anime Blog.
Okay, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's my advice and the advice of the bloggers behind 12 anime blogs that I think are really cool about how they got started, how you build an income stream, mm-hmm. how you build an audience, things like that. But the thing that I think listeners would be most interested in is that one of the interviews I did is with Charles of Beneath the Tangles.
No. No, yeah, just kidding. Of course, I already knew that. But I was very intrigued when I saw that interview up on Beneath the Tangles earlier in the year. And yes, I unfortunately myself have not yet read the book, but that is definitely something that I need to check out because, well, what kind of different bloggers did you get? You got Charles of Beneath the Tangles. We are all familiar with what he does. Are they other people in a similar situation to Charles? Starting their own blogs by themselves and building it over the course of a few years, or?
Yeah, every single person is a person who started their own blog. I could have interviewed people who were on group blogs or were professional bloggers, like who have a column with Anime News Network, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Bob Duh, Nick Kramer, who I interviewed, does do that, but I only interviewed him about his personal blog. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show that, hey, these are people who have become successful, but they have just started their own blog mm-hmm. by themselves. And look at what they've been able to achieve with that. I wanted to show just how in reach that is.
That's so cool. And where can our listeners buy this book and how much is it?
It's $6. So it's like the cost of a Starbucks coffee.
Wow. That's very reasonable.
And you can get it on Amazon or you can get it in EPUB form if you want to read it on like an iPad or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get that at Gumroad. And both links are on my website, otakujournalist.com/books.
And we'll be sure to link everyone to that on our podcast page. Well, thank you so much for your time this month. As always, it's a joy to spend time talking with you, and I hope we'll have you on the Tangles again at some point. Please be sure to check out Lauren's work at otakujournalist.com and also check out her free course on starting your blog and her newest book. Don't worry, we'll have links for you on the podcast page at beneaththetangles.com. Thanks, Lauren, and I look forward to next time. I love interacting with Lauren, and that interview was absolutely no exception. So, with that said, our topic for this month's episode is the year in review, as mentioned in the interview. So would you mind explaining just a little bit about what that means for the episode, Sean?
Sure. Basically, the concept we had for this anniversary episode was, you know, a change of form, but also a renewal of what is great about the podcast. And just like we took our previous podcast episodes to heart and tried to design a new format that was both interesting and entertaining, we also like to take some time on episode 13 to reflect on the media that we've consumed over the past year. And not only what we've watched and what we enjoyed, but how it has reached out of the screen or off the pages and impacted our lives, whether that be spiritual or secular, whether it's motivated or inspired us in any way, we'd like to talk about that and reflect upon that. So that's going to be the format for the main topic on this podcast. And on that note, I think an appropriate place to begin this discussion would be with JP. As you may know, if you've been following some of the previous podcasts, JP just got back from Japan. And so I'd like to turn it over to you, JP, and ask, has actually visiting the culture that you've had so much interest in affected the media that you have consumed from that culture in any way? How has that impacted your life, and how has your experience in Japan shaped how you view Japanese media and culture?
You know, I'm glad you asked that, because I actually just recently was having conversations with people about this. So basically every year I have this tradition of when I get home from, well, it used to be high school, now university, and we'll see where life takes me from now on. But every time I'd go back to my parents' home, I would go through my room and I would start selling stuff, because I'd be like, I don't need this stuff anymore. I will never play this video game again, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
And so when I got home from Japan, I did it again, and I started selling stuff that I never thought I would, which was it started off with a lot of my anime figures and my other collectibles and some of my video games that I thought I might like to keep. And, you know, I started, like, thinking about, why am I selling all this stuff that I clearly bought for a reason, and some of it I spent a lot of money on, too. And I realized that for especially the last several years of my life, when I was purchasing these things, I really had this deep desire to go to Japan. And I think, in the back of my mind, I was vicariously living the culture I wanted by purchasing these material items, especially these anime figures. And this is not to knock people who collect anime figures, because I still kept a handful. Because I still love, I kept my Angel Beats one, I kept my Rewrite ones. If it's related to Key, I probably kept it. Stuff like that. But now that I've actually experienced the culture, especially in the 3 months I spent there, I exhausted many of the cultural experiences I wanted. I realized I don't need these things anymore. Part of me really wanted to go to Japan, but I couldn't. So I bought these things instead. And now I've had the experience there, and I find I don't need it anymore. And it's really impacted the way I consume a lot of other media, because I'm a little bit pickier now. Because it's like, I no longer have the mindset I had a while ago, which was, it's related to Japan, sure, I'll try it. Now it's like, okay, it's related to Japan, it also has to be good. So I guess that's, if I had to boil it down, that's how I would say my experience in Japan has affected my consumption.
That is a really interesting point. And it kind of, to me, feels like, I guess how I would say what you're saying, is that, at least for me, entertainment is kind of a proxy for life experience. So it's wish fulfillment, you know? Like, a lot of the things that I enjoy are fantastical in nature. I couldn't do it, or maybe I'm not strong enough, or I don't have the time. But so watching things that deal with people who do these things...
But you couldn't do that? You couldn't do
that? I can't slay dragons, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
One, there aren't any. And two, I don't have any great swords. And three, I'm probably not strong enough. I hate to say. If I could slay them with my mind and my words, I might have a fighting chance.
Okay.
But yeah, no late nights climbing the mountain to kill the dragon. So it's fun as a form of wish fulfillment, but in a case like yours, it becomes clear that once you've actually done something in real life, or, you know, you like slice of life. So you actually had a slice of life. You went there and you experienced a lot of tropes and a lot of things, but for real. And so once you've done it, you don't necessarily need the entertainment anymore, because life itself is the greatest entertainment. And I think one topic that I really wanted to bring up in this discussion portion was the purpose of entertainment, which would be valid if we're talking about media consumption. We consume it, but why? And the point you raised almost seems to say to me, you know, we consume it because we want something more, or we enjoy something, so we want more of it than we could have on our own time. But that's just a motivation or a fantasy, you know. But what happens when you're actually motivated to do something by entertainment? You get inspired, and then you actually go out and do it in real life. And like the interview we had today, you know, ostensibly Lauren started out a fan. She's an otaku, you know, but now she's working for Forbes, which is really awesome. You know,
yes.
And it's a very respectable career, if I could only aspire to such. But it started out because of, you know, entertainment and possible inspiration and enjoyment. And now it has become her actually making her way in the world using that. And so that's one of the things that I thought we could all focus on, is maybe talk about some of the shows we've seen this year and how it's inspired us, you know, in our spiritual lives or in our careers. And I would just say, to dovetail off of the Bloodborne plug that I gave earlier, and I know JP is writing an article, I believe, on Bloodborne coming up, so this is apropos, that playing Dark Souls and Bloodborne have really shown me, by proxy, I guess, that the world can be a genuinely lonely or evil place. I mean, the worlds you experience in those games are pretty messed up, but if you stop to think about it, the world we live in is pretty messed up too. Just turn the news on for a couple days, and you'll see atrocities that are on that magnitude. Maybe not with cosmic Cthulhu space aliens, but you don't need cosmic Cthulhu space aliens to deal with the tragedies that we deal with every day. And so, though it may be lonely or evil, you know, goodness or agency lies within you, the individual. So if it's a game or you know, an anime, you're the audience or you're the player and you're directing this avatar. But in real life, you know,
you are the avatar.
You are the avatar, you know. If you believe in God or you have a faith persuasion, then you believe in some variety of you are made by God or you have the spirit of God or you do God's will. And, you know, that is not too far removed, as I'm sure other people have observed in other podcasts elsewhere, that, you know, it is not too far removed to say that the player avatar and you versus you and God, there's definitely a parallel that can be drawn that can elevate you playing a video game to a philosophical discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, bottom line, world can be evil, but goodness and agency, you know, is guarded within yourself, and you cultivate it by taking action. In the game, you're pressing buttons, but in life, you know, you're creating a family, or you're perpetuating an ideal, or you're standing up for something. And I don't know if that has anything to do with your article, JP. Maybe you want to dovetail into that.
Yeah, just as a brief aside, I will be posting an article at some point in the near future called What a Christian Can Learn from Demonic Video Games, The Brilliant Narrative of the Souls series. So I recommend you check it out. It's probably not that great, but, you know.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Dude.
Don't say that.
I
had a hook, JP.
I built that up, JP. You let me down. Here,
we'll try again. We'll let the readers decide. I do want to rewind just for a second with what you're saying. So when I was talking about Japan, I'm saying how experienced the culture represented in the media I like has now influenced the way I consume media. And Sean is
been promoted.
We'll see. Sean has been talking about how the media you consume can affect, this is putting it very, very over simply, the media you consume, how that can affect your actions, right?
Sure.
Okay. So now, you're a big fan of sci-fi, fantasy, epics, right?
I wouldn't disagree.
Okay.
I can't say that I'm not.
So now, Charles and I, on the other hand, and Charles, you can tell me if I'm off base on this, tend to gravitate more towards drama or comedy or things that could conceivably actually happen, right?
I wouldn't disagree.
Okay, thank you. Well, at least I'm with people who don't disagree with me. So I recall writing an article in Anime Today before I left for Japan called Experiencing Context. And so what I'm reminded of is how I'm watching all these silly slice of life. Like Frank and I sometimes overlap in our interests, and one of those is Golden Mosaic, which is nothing but a silly slice of life. But I realized that as I watched this, I desired to understand more of the context, cultural context of the series, which, honestly, I mean, I would have never gone to Japan if I had never experienced anime. I think my interests have now transcended anime. It includes more than anime. But still includes it. But had I never been exposed to it, I never would have experienced these other aspects of Japanese culture that I like. So now, Sean, you're very interested in fantasy and taking out these core concepts, but to me it also applies to just maybe you have an interest in Japanese culture. Like Charles, you like a lot of drama, comedy, etc. Well, I was going to mention Haruhi, but that's really not a realistic drama now, is it? but some of the light novels you're talking about and shows you've mentioned in the past, like, have you ever desired to go to Japan to learn more about the context, say, the cultural context of things like that?
You know, I think I did when I was your age. Okay. You know, this actually, I'm actually thinking back to something that Sean said earlier in the conversation. Actually, what you said, JP, maybe both of you, the idea that once you've experienced it, it kind of changes everything, right? You aren't trying to relive it in a sense the best you can if you've already lived it out, you know. And I was gonna say something then, but it was a little off topic. Maybe it's on topic now. But for me, everything changed with family, because that was reality suddenly hitting. So. Before I had family, I was the collector. You know, I had so much anime. It was ridiculous. Just, you know, I was living in a time where you couldn't stream every single show, right? So I was buying everything off the DVD shelves for like $30 for four episodes back in those horrible days.
VHS hard subs.
I think Japan is still in those days.
Mailing stuff to each other. I mean, even I was even thinking about purchasing laser discs and so forth. I mean,
oh gosh,
back in those horrible days. So, you know, when reality hits, when you're faced with what real life is about, then it changes everything. My anime collection has shrunk considerably as I sold most of it off on eBay. But I guess that was context in a different way, context of life, because you really set yourself up thinking, oh, this is how things are going to be. I'm going to live, and maybe not even, and certainly not intentionally, I guess for Christians at least, that I'm going to live for fun, live for pleasure, but that's what you're actually living for until some sort of experience hits you, you know, a come to Jesus moment, which necessarily is always coming to Jesus. Sometimes it's having a baby. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wow. You know what? I need to put a crib here, so there goes all my manga. You know, something like that. So,
well, I mean, a little bit off topic. I, you know, you may say off topic, but I think it's pretty applicable, especially from the angle of wish fulfillment that I briefly mentioned when I was talking about, you know, you do it for wish fulfillment and then you actually live it. You don't need to do it anymore. Well, that's kind of it though. If you're living for fun, you're consuming for fun. And that is one of the reasons, speaking like broadly, not even just anime, but that's a reason that a lot of people consume. They buy nice cars, they buy nice houses, and materialism is a very tempting substitute for substance. You know, if you don't take the time to think about it yourself, what is easier than purchasing someone else's opinion and watching it? In either making it your own, or ascribing to a faith without thinking through your own philosophy, or just consuming entertainment to keep from thinking about what direction your life is heading in. And I don't think a lot of people do it intentionally. I did that unintentionally for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, I was still doing well in school, and I was still progressing and doing the things that people told me I should be doing, but I wasn't thinking about it for myself. And a lot of that was because I was afraid that there was no meaning to what I was doing. So I didn't want to think about it. And I was just like, if I just keep doing it and doing it well, I'll be successful, whatever that means. I'll be happy, whatever that means. So what does it mean? Well, I watched a bunch of entertainment, and then, you know, the classic stereotype is, well, people watch a bunch of Disney, and people always complain, like, women always want to be Disney princesses, and men want to be princes, or whatever. And it's this very childish mentality, which is cute when you're little, but when you're 30, it's not cute anymore. You know what I mean? It's kind of tragic. So I don't think your observations are off topic at all. I mean, what better thing than family to ground someone? It's what keeps the world going around, after all, you know, and culture, and inspires people to tell great stories. So, you know, I think that's a great observation. And I feel like you could link that, to link this to actual games and anime, since that is the podcast, I think you could link the themes that Charles just brought up and some of the stuff I talked about, and JP's experience about not having to collect things after doing them. I think you can link that into quite a few things. You can link it into, well, as JP says, the Soulsborne games, the Dark Souls and Demon Souls and Bloodborne, from the perspective of, you have to work hard to win at those games. And so by that sense, it's a much more approximate to real life than it is to a game. Because people who play games for fun because they want to win instantly, or play like a video game movie, like, sometimes they don't like Dark Souls and Demon Souls because they get mad because if they don't do it right, they don't win. You know, if they don't cultivate skill, they're not going to beat the boss. And that's kind of like life. You want to cruise through life, but it's not going to work. You're living a couple thousand years ago, you get eaten by a mammoth. You know, I mean, like, you know, and Christ, you know, Christ, if you don't work, you don't eat.
Were mammoths carnivores?
Well, if you try to spear them too many times, you know, it's survival of the fittest. So they're just going to tusk you and toss you into the frozen boards, and that's it. Game over. So, I mean, you can tie that hard edge, like, wake up to reality, oddly enough, into Dark Souls or Demon Souls. And you can tie in the concept of meaning, or meaninglessness, I think, to a lot of existential or horrific games. I mean, one that I played is Alien Isolation, which is basically, I mean, these people rotely living on this space station trying to create this utopia, but it's already disintegrated from beneath their feet. So they're just mindlessly building this colony when they don't have money, and the businesses are failing, and the expansion into the Outer Rim in the sci-fi universe is over, and people are heading back to Earth, and you've got these crazy people out on the Outer Rim trying to develop this utopia that no one wants, you know? And what it does is it degenerates into the most evil possible place of complete corporate machine-run mentality, and the embodiment of that is this alien creature that's just running around killing everyone. So, I mean, that's a bit grandiose of a metaphor, yeah. But...
We just got pretty dark here.
Yeah, sorry about that. But you can make that parallel to a robotic individual in life who mindlessly does something, whether they mindlessly consume or they mindlessly collect, or, you know, whether they haven't taken the time to find meaning in their existence, you can become a monster. And so that's why I think it's good to kind of, I don't know, do you have a purge every once in a while, or you have, like Charles said, a come to Jesus moment or a wake up moment where what's more important? My collection or the crib for my baby, you know? So you just let that stuff go.
But it's a tough question.
It's a tough for some people. For some people, it's a genuinely existential crisis. But, you know, one would hope the baby would win out in the end.
Well, now you mentioned Alien Isolation. Of course, that's not a Japanese production.
Snuck it in.
Correct. You just snuck it in there. Thank you. Do you have any examples on that topic from something that did come from Japan?
I do. If it's relevance you desire and not meaningless diversion, then I would say I don't know if you would agree because I know you've seen this. Princess Kaguya, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
It comes at its worldview from this very like.
This is a recent Ghibli film. For those who don't know,
have you seen it, Charles?
This is actually the prime example of me collecting things and not watching them because I've had the DVD on my shelf for like 4 months untouched.
What?
But I'll let y'all talk about it.
It's just waiting to add context to the discussion we're having. It's just waiting for you to put it in that player. But
there'll be a post up, I'm sure, in the next month or so.
All right. Okay, brevity is the soul of wit, and I am not ascribing to that maxim. So I will keep this really quick. The reason I would say Princess Kaguya is because the almost nihilistic ending of that film where it develops this love story, it develops this, you know, this princess who's clearly a supernatural origin.
Should we be doing a spoiler warning here?
That's pretty standard for Japanese mythology. Okay. I won't say any more than that. Okay, it's a princess of supernatural origin, okay? I'm sorry Darth Vader is Luke's father, but there is a princess, a supernatural princess in a Japanese production. So what happens is you get this development of a kind of a love story or a sense of meaning. And then, to not spoil too much, you get a substitution of a cosmic nature. Like, everything that you've experienced in this reality is just a play. You know? Sorry. Game over. And that's kind of the end of the movie. The only thing that gives the character some kind of tragic beauty, I guess, is because she cultivated experiences that were meaningful to her, that she took back with her as her responsibility is, I guess, metaphorically, as a princess and the ruler of a kingdom, in this case, a cosmic kingdom. But that really kind of drove home to me, like, wow, this whole movie, she's going through this crisis and slowly sinking into depression, that the thing that she wanted, she wasn't getting, or I guess her experience in the world that she had so looked forward to was not at all the ideal place that she had thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a large portion of the film, she turns off her mind, and there's a sequence of like suitors and, like, you know, they're hideously unattractive or whatever. And so she's basically like, I don't care. I'll just marry whoever. I just don't care anymore. And, that to me really illustrated, it struck me profoundly. It made me very depressed for like a week after I saw it.
Wow.
that movie messed me up. But that's one of the only Ghibli movies that I've actually shed a tear to.
Have you seen Grave of the Fireflies?
Yeah, but that was so horrifyingly sad I couldn't even cry.
Yeah, you're just dry after that one.
I was in shock. Like, Princess Kaguya teased it up and made me feel like it was going to be good, and then they stuck the dagger in, so they got a couple tears out of me. But it really did hit home to me because I was like, wow, you know, she spent her life, her one chance to experience Earth, she spent it like most of us spend it, which is not searching for meaning and just giving up on life. And thankfully she was able to come to some meaning, but that to me would be a more Japanese oriented production, that in my opinion, at least, kind of speaks to a Japanese sense, a little bit more melancholy view of the world as either, you know, just animistic or, you know, atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Well, That is a little bit of a melancholy note to end on, but for the sake of time, we're going to have to move on in the podcast. Sean, do you want to give any 30-second sort of conclusion to your thoughts? Maybe something that will make us all feel a little bit better about ourselves.
Man, I didn't realize you were going to transition on that. I wouldn't have even said it.
No, I don't feel melancholy at all because I actually took my headphones off to avoid the spoilers for the last few minutes here.
Good man.
So I feel fine.
Good man. All right. Well, if I was going anywhere with any of that, I would say that the greater the difficulty or danger in your life, or by proxy in entertainment, the more value you possess. You don't enjoy something where you know the hero is going to live. Like, he's never really in danger. It's set up in such a way that it's like, it's not even captivating to watch. Why is that? Because you want there to be adversity to be overcome.
It's a Fate Stay Night.
Yeah. We could bring that. We could bring that up.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Fate Stay Night. Exactly. The concept of Fate Stay Night was that this character would be in mortal danger and that he would overcome it, and that the servants and the meaning of the servants would really embody that struggle. But in the actual execution, Shiro has lots of plot armor, so he's never really
in danger. Okay, yeah. You know what? I just made a big misstep there, and we do need to move on, but I do want to fix my misstep.
Go ahead.
Because I just realized that is a huge flaw in changing from the visual novel medium to the anime. Because in the visual novel, Shiro dies so many times.
Oh, yeah. Choose your own adventure.
Because every time you make a wrong decision, you die. So whenever you're reading it, there is always this sense of, like, impending doom. It's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Do I move left or right? If I move right, I might get stabbed. If I move left, I might get crushed.
Right.
One of them's not. You will live one of the ways, but you're going to die the other. So you do lose that in the anime. So.
Well, just to wrap it up, I mean, pretty much, the reason people want that is because, you know, difficulty generates meaning and actually allows for experiences, spiritual or secular, that really shape who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in consumption, I think people are drawn to the things that inspire them in that way. Or alternately, the people who are afraid of danger and adversity will consume mindlessly to not think about that they're not doing what they should be in their actual life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to end on a positive note, you would just say, you know, the choice is yours. Like, you know, you are what you eat, right? So I think that applies not only to food, but also to entertainment. You know, what you consume does say a lot about you. And as, you know, JP pointed out in his trip to Japan, it can also, on the one hand, inspire your desires in real life. But two, on the other hand, its reality is a wake-up call that distances itself from the fantasy of consumption versus your everyday life. So leave it at that.
Very fair points. So at this point, we're going to move on to our listener mail. Listener mail.
All right, and this month, we have just one question from Will, who asked, if an anime has ecchi content, but I really like the story and the characters, is it okay to watch? Which is a fantastic question, Will. Do any of you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm deciding if I want to go first now.
JP, I'm looking at you.
Charles, do you have an opinion?
I may skirt around the question a little bit. I think if you have to ask yourself that question, I think that's meaningful in itself, right? I don't know if I should watch this because it has edgy content, but I really like it. I think maybe that points to a lot of what we've been talking about in this podcast, which is how are you approaching your entertainment? Have you thought about how this is impacting you, why you're watching, what the value of it is? And I think that probably goes a long way to answering the question for each specific individual because, you know, I don't think we can say that there is a direct yes or no to this question.
That did indeed skirt around the question.
That was a very,
you guys can fill in the details.
It was a very successful skirt.
Thank you. I'm good at that.
I saw a lot of successful skirts in Japan.
Indeed. As I'm sure Will would see if he chose to watch this show.
And now I am skirting around the entire topic, not just the question. Oh, okay, so sorry. To rewind to when we were still talking about things that mattered. So yes, I'm going to kind of say some of what Charles did. And this is always my go-to answer for this, is everyone's different. There are some objectives. Especially when you are in Christianity, there are things like I mean, there are some objective things you should not do. You should not murder. But you know, it gets into some gray areas sometimes. Some people can see a woman in a bikini walking down the beach and not have any issues. And I know people who watch Game of Thrones. And this is all in the Christian context. I have plenty of friends who watch Game of Thrones, and some of them are very mature individuals, and they can watch it with no problem, really. They can see murder, they can see the sexual content, and none of it really seems to bother them. However, most people are bothered by things like that, and I think, like Charles said, if you're asking the question, maybe it does bother you. My preferences are different from other people's preferences. I fall short where some people are slightly better equipped. it's really hard for me to answer, but I guess I'm just going to copy what Charles said and say, maybe if you are asking the question, maybe you should analyze why it is you're watching it in the first place.
Are you guys really going to leave it to me to bring down the hammer?
I am going to leave it to you.
All right. I apologize. All right. Don't do it. Don't watch it. And if you would have asked that question and I had been on this podcast 5 years ago, I would have given the exact same answer JP and Charles gave. That's totally, that's where I was at. I was fine with it. And the only difference between then and now, and I will agree it's an individual thing, but I can only answer honestly as myself. So mm-hmm. I did that with that exact mentality. And at the time, it did not bother me. You know, there were a couple shows where I was like, I really like this plot. I really want to watch this, you know? So I watched it and there's some edgy content, whatever. But it devolved over time because, to use the examples already brought up, you walk by the beach and you see someone in a bikini, or you watch a couple seasons of a show and there's some inappropriate scenes. Maybe they make you uncomfortable or maybe you don't care. That's fine. But if you are regularly consuming this media, and that is the caveat, if you're not regularly consuming this media and it's honestly a one-time thing and it doesn't bother you, okay. But if I were to bring another perspective to it, and this is explicitly Christian, so if you're not Christian, I hope I don't alienate you, but I will just speak my mind. The Bible talks about sowing and reaping, and it says that, you know, on the positive side, you can sow a good seed, and it doesn't matter how long it takes or who is ultimately responsible for making that seed, that thought of good germinate, is irrelevant, but that it does eventually is all that matters. But it also says on the flip side of that, that, you know, there are people who pursue death, which if you get into what the death is, it's really foolishness. A lot of times in those passages in the Psalms and Proverbs are called sons of worthlessness or sons of foolishness. And foolish behavior is oftentimes joking or sexual in nature, which is basically the definition of an ecchi. That's what it is. It's just silly throwaway. But it's foolishness. And if you watch too much foolishness for too long, it really will start to have an effect on you. So that's why I would say don't do it, because there's so many other shows out there that will give you the same enjoyment that don't have that content in it. So just focus your consumption on that, and I don't think you'll regret it. So that's how I would answer that question.
Yeah, so if you want Sorry, Charles.
Go ahead.
If you want the really positive summary of that, I would say let me rethink, make sure I put this correctly so I'm not misinterpreting what Sean is saying, but you can find something if you have to go through this process of questioning it. As Charles and I have said, maybe you should rethink it, and if you have to rethink it, there's probably something that will give you just as much enjoyment in the anime world that will not have that detracting value.
Because what's the purpose for ecchi, really? Why include ecchi?
Is that a rhetorical?
No, like, for real. Like, yeah, well, okay, it's purely materialistic and or secular and or, I guess, base is a good word. It's just lowest common denominator. People like to see sexy stuff. So sex sells, right?
Yeah, that was another understatement of the episode.
So if you're talking about content consumption, right back to what JP and Shell said, why are you consuming it? Are you consuming it to be uplifted and inspired, as we alluded to earlier, or are you consuming it to A, waste time, or B, maybe run away from something? And I've consumed media in all three of those fashions. So I'd like to think I'm not talking out of my ear. I've definitely, like, have looked in the mirror and been like, I was watching this stuff because I didn't want to address what was going on in my life. And it, in my particular case, it usually was comedy that I would watch when I was crying outside, but I wanted to laugh, so I'd watch some comedy. Now, not everyone who watches comedy has that problem, but, you know, you do have a lot of famous comedians that are really messed up behind the camera, and, you know, most recently, what, to make things even more depressing, Robin Williams killed himself. I was like, why would Robin Williams kill himself? He's such a funny, nice guy, you know? There was a lot more going on to Robin Williams than anyone understood, even his family. So, not to put too fine a point on it, there's probably a lot more going on in your desires and what you're consuming than just the fact that you want to watch something. Because that's what most people say. Oh, I just want to watch it. It's just fun. But people really aren't like that. It's never really fun. You know, it's always, there's always something else. It's fun for a reason. So to end on the note that JP and Charles said, you know, rethink it and question yourself. But if you're second guessing yourself, then just don't watch it. There's so much out there. Japan has a tremendous output of entertainment. You can find something else if it bothers you.
Now, we interrupted you earlier, or I interrupted you. I should own up to that, I guess. Charles, what did you want to add?
I don't remember, but I will say that...
I did it again.
Piggybacking on Sean, that it is a good idea to second-guess yourself when you're approaching this content. Because, you know, I think a lot of us don't think that these things will affect us. We're able to ignore them. We do probably ignore most of it, maybe. But we don't really know what kind of effect it's having on us a lot of times until it's already grabbed a hold of us. And certainly, if you're doing what Sean was talking about, watching these kind of things regularly, almost certainly going to have a negative impact on you spiritually. So, yeah, that's it.
Well, thank you for that conclusion, Charles.
In summary, just ask King David. That's all I'm going to say. Read 2 Samuel.
Thanks for that, Sean.
No problem.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap up this episode of The Tangles. I hope that you were adequately satisfied with your answer, Will. If not, I don't really know what to tell you.
It's my fault if you're not, Will. Blame me.
I hope you enjoyed our new format. Not just Will, everyone. I'm using the plural you now. We'd love to hear your feedback, so please don't hesitate to send questions for listener mail or comments and criticisms about the podcast to thetangles@outlook.com or just leave a comment on the podcast page at beneaththetangles.com. If you enjoyed what you heard in today's interview, be sure to check out more of Lauren Orsini's work at otakujournalist.com. And as always, for more articles and media on the intersection of otaku culture and faith, check out beneaththetangles.com. Later, everyone.
See you later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of The Tangles, official companion podcast to beneaththetangles.com. Be sure to check out our full site for more articles and analyses on the intersection of otaku culture and faith. If you would like to submit a question, send an email to thetangles@outlook.com. Also, be sure to follow our Twitter, @AnimeTangles, and like our Facebook page, Beneath the Tangles. And rate and review The Tangles on iTunes. Featured opening and closing songs are Japanese Dream by Duke Ellington's Orchestra and Blue Piano Stomp by Johnny Dodds, available in the public domain. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for The Tangles.
I guess we'll take this opportunity to segue into the next portion of our podcast. Sean?
Oh, you want me to do a segue? Okay, all right. Well, we'll pause for 3 seconds, then I'll give a segue. That was incredible.
Yeah, I'll put in, like, little sound effects or something. Okay, anyway, I'm going to move on. Wait, this will be
segue
a bit,
to
of
JP,
course,
right?
Where you were gonna segue to me, right? You were gonna segue to my experience in Japan, right?
Oh, do I have to pause again and do that? Okay. that seems to be the theme tonight. So. All right, the editor will be busy. Okay, let's see where I end up.
Okay. Equals sign explanation equals
yeah,
sign.
Yeah, this is fantastically written. All right, let's see. Gave the explanation. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, how do I want don't say that. Okay, I got it. 3 seconds, then we're all. Yay! The end.
Alright.
That was pretty much right on time. Good job, JP. Thank you. That was exactly. Alrighty then.
I think that went well.
It did go pretty well.
Very good, guys. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show. We actually managed to keep under an hour.
We're on time for once. Maybe this is a good idea after all.
Very good. All right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you all later.
Sounds good. Good night, Charles.
Thanks,
good
night. See ya.
Bye.